Hey, Vianne.
Hope you've been keeping out of trouble, mate.
Trying to move forward as always.
So today we speak to Nicole Sahidi, a designer with more than 7 years of experience, originally from the Lebanon, but very much a global citizen or digital nomad for the last 2 years.
Yes, and I need to add that Nicole is a self-made designer. Not only she taught herself the skills needed to become proficient at her craft, but she also learned how to market herself as a freelance professional.
I know this is a topic that is very interesting and very relevant to you, sir.
Most definitely.
So what were some of the topics we covered?
We discussed about the benefits and the challenges of the life of a digital nomad. We also discussed about how to educate yourself as a UX designer. And finally, Nicole shared with us her strategy when it comes to market her skills and find clients.
An important takeaway from me from the conversation is that practice makes perfect, or rather in Nicole's case, practice makes for great learning. So John, something else that I'm quite proud of in this show is that Nicole felt very comfortable with us and able to share a very exclusive news about her career. So heard first time right here on Block Thinking. I'm feeling very journalistic at the moment. So without further ado, here's Nicole.
I'm Nicole. I'm a UIX designer. I have around 7 years of experience and I come from Lebanon. I'm kind of a digital nomad, so I travel around the world while designing and working remotely. So what I do is that the last 2 years, I've been traveling around the world to speak at international conferences, coaching at coding boot camps, writing on my blog and creating online courses. And my consultancy work focuses on UIX design, the full process from wireframing to prototyping to light front-end development.
Nicole, thanks for joining us. Great to have you on the show. Nicole, we always ask this first question to our guests. What is your unique value proposition? Why would someone want to work with Nicole?
I think my value proposition would be how obsessed I am with optimizing my design workflow. I always try to make sure the design process that I work on is streamlined as much as possible. This means both my process and my communication with my team and developers. So I try to focus on that all the time by using the best tools I can and the best practices and just trying to always rethink my process all the time to make sure it's efficient.
I think it's a great answer.
May you tell us, how did you get into design?
Sure. I started as a typical graphic designer. I was like a print designer, you could say. And this happened because I graduated with a multimedia degree. So multimedia was a very new career at that time. It basically combines all kinds of design principles and graphic design, print design, a bit of web development, a bit of logo design. So it's basically all kinds of design and media combined together, even photo editing and video and film and all of that. So this basically is something you learn that after that, you decide what you want to do, like if you want to be a graphic designer, a web designer, etc. So after this, I got my first job immediately after I graduated. It was a web/graphic designer job.
Okay.
And it was kind of a bit outside of my comfort zone because after I graduated, I kind of didn't know anything since I learned 1% of everything.
Okay.
So it was a bit of a challenge for me on my first job. But what I did is I just researched a lot, watched a lot of tutorials, and just worked on myself in order for me to learn everything all over again.
Excellent.
So you basically self-taught, right? So a lot of stuff you've done yourself.
Exactly, yeah. Even though I did learn at university, but kind of didn't really help me at all.
That's quite an interesting point because a lot of us, and I'm sure you're the same, Nicole, is that we have people actually approaching us asking for, you know, what is the best way? What is the best courses? And my gut feeling is it's always great to go for a studies, but it's also the work that you put in yourself. It's the research. It's finding answers across the web. So I find that you're kind of echoing that.
Yes, exactly. I get a lot of questions by email, people asking me, which major do I do in my university? And I'm always like, oh my God, what do I say? Because honestly, whatever you do, it's not the main thing you should focus on. The main thing you should focus on is you working on yourself. So what I usually recommend is to actually major in something that you're interested in. For example, it could be like psychology or something. If you major in that and at the same time, you work on yourself to learn UIX design on the side, I think that would be the perfect thing to do instead of learning it at university and actually wasting your time and money to relearn everything all over again.
Yeah, thanks for raising that topic because I think it's really important because it's also what I find and I'm making the statement to see if you agree with me or not, is that with design, sometimes people forget that you have to bring something of yourself into this. So there's kind of two spaces here. It's first of all, you have to immerse yourself. I mean, this is not a 9-to-5 thing. You have to live it, right? And then any other experiences that you have, so maybe it's your major that you're studying or some other part-time work you've done, you have to find ways to bring that into your design practice.
Exactly, yes, exactly. I agree on that. And I think it's all about practice and you trying to learn new things and getting curious about things. So if you are not part of this learning experience, if you're just attending courses at university just because you have to, then this is not going to work for you. You have to be immersing yourself in the experience itself and learning new things and working, practicing, doing experiments on yourself. If you don't do that, then yeah, you're basically wasting your time. So you have to work on yourself in order for you to really be a good designer.
That's a great point. There's an English saying that practice makes perfect. So maybe in design, it's practice makes for learning.
Exactly, yeah.
Great. And then you mentioned being a nomad. And I don't know if it's because I'm an old guy, but I see the world digital nomad pop up into a lot of hashtags. So can you describe to me what this word nomad means to you and maybe a typical day in the life of a nomad?
So being a digital nomad is basically traveling the world while you're working remotely. So that's like the basic definition of it. So you can be wherever you want to go. It could be an island in Australia, it could be in Hawaii, it could be wherever you want. And you're just using the internet to work and your laptop. And okay. That's all you need. And that's what I've been doing the last 2 years. I've been traveling the world, but not just to work remotely on my consultancy, but also to speak at conferences and teaching at a coding bootcamp. And this coding bootcamp is actually spread out all over Europe. So I've been traveling and teaching a bit in each batch, in each city. A typical day would be trying to focus, basically trying to focus on working. And it's a challenge to be at like a new city that you want to discover while you also have a client waiting for you for a deadline or something. So it's a challenge. And trying my best to make this work and to stay organized as much as possible. So my typical day would be working a bit on my personal projects, my design projects, the freelance projects, seeing the city a bit, planning a trip to a new city, and also editing my course and writing articles. So this is just in one day. So I work on so many different channels, and that's why it's a challenge for me to organize my day.
So self-discipline becomes a big thing, right? Self-discipline is a very important aspect of being a nomad.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you can just not do anything all day and just lay on the beach and just not think about anything else. But you shouldn't, right? Because you need to make money. So yeah, self-discipline is the key here to be a digital nomad. And it's also a huge responsibility. I mean, you're responsible of yourself all the time. You're taking risks all the time. You're traveling every week and you're seeing a new city. You could get sick at any moment. And it's basically a huge responsibility to have when you're traveling all the time. But this teaches you a lot of things and things you wouldn't learn by yourself just by living in one city all the time.
And Nicole, between you and me, right, I hope no one is really listening to this, but I just realized why maybe I have a full-time job. But jokes aside, it's really inspiring. I'm loving this.
Aside of the good aspects of being a nomad, you mentioned illness, the risk that you're taking being independent. Can you give us more challenges that you face while working remotely?
Yeah. So I think the main challenge that I've been having as a digital nomad is avoiding distractions. So that's the biggest challenge I had. So what I always recommend is to plan your day or even your week. So try to always say what you're going to do this day or this week and make sure to do this as a to-do list. You know, like I'm going to do this and that, and even plan some time for entertainment and touring and traveling and do that. But just say that you're going to do that and be realistic. Like, don't say that I'm going to spend today from 8 till 6 working on this. You're not going to do that. We all know this. So try to organize your day and be realistic as much as you can. There's a lot of tools that I use to organize my day. Trello, Pomodoro, and all of that. I've actually written about all of these on my blog.
We'll make sure to share the link on the show notes.
Yeah, mention the link, please, of your blog.
So it's just blog.nicolesaidinmyname.com. And it redirects you on Medium. Yeah.
Excellent.
And other than organizing my time, also, how can you say, like the money I get is not always stable. So this is something else that you will have as a challenge as a digital nomad. Since you're working as a freelancer and you might stop working as a freelancer sometime. So you won't have a stable income all the time. And this is also a challenge. You need to have some savings all the time in order just in case, what happens if I don't get a project this month or something like that? So this is another challenge that I've had as well.
So it's like planning for the peaks and the dips, right?
Exactly. So what usually happens with me is that I get, for example, 3 projects. I get a big pay this month and I'm like, hey, I'm happy. And then the next month or the one after, I don't get anything else, you know? So it's just all ups and downs, and it's never going to be stable all the time. So this is also a challenge, but it's nice, you know, it's exciting and it's outside of your comfort zone. It's a nice feeling to have, but it's still just a challenge to keep in mind.
No one wants to close any doors, right? But do you ever get tempted to take up full-time work again?
Actually, I will have a full-time job from 2 months from now. Yeah, so I'm actually going to ditch my digital nomad lifestyle. And will be a full-time employee.
So basically, for you, this is going outside of your comfort
zone.
Exactly. May you tell us more about that, or is it like super secret?
No, it's not secret. I mean, I haven't shared it on social media yet, but sure, I can talk about this. The main purpose and the main reason, motivation, why I'm changing from digital nomad to full-time employee is that basically I want to live in Amsterdam. That's my first reason.
That makes 2 of us.
Yeah. So that's my main reason. I want to live in Amsterdam. So I applied for a couple of jobs there and I got a job at booking.com, which is also very exciting for me.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I'm starting in 2 months and it's going to be a very different lifestyle from anything I've had living in Amsterdam, having a full-time job, but at the same time working at such a huge company and working with so many people. And I'm really, really excited about this. And other reasons why I chose to be a full-time employee is also sometimes I get tired from traveling a bit too much. So I kind of needed this long break. I need this break just to, you know, settle down, live in one place and try to see if I'm comfortable with this or not. So it's like an experiment for me as well to see if maybe I need to rest for a while and be at one place and see what happens.
I'm very excited for
congratulations.
You. I think you made a great choice in a company. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That leads me to a question, right, where this has also come up before, and I'd love to understand how you approached it, because moving from freelance / nomading it into a full-time job, for me, the critical point comes when you negotiate going into a full-time space. Did you negotiate in any way that it suits a little bit of your lifestyle, or did you say, I'm going to take whatever this company offers me and go for it?
Yeah, I'm kind of going 100% dedicated. But as long as I can have some vacation time for me to travel on weekends or a long weekend or something like that. So I have plans to travel. I will not stop traveling. That will not happen. But it's just that a different purpose of travel. Before, I used to travel and work. Now it's going to be more like traveling for vacation, like normal people. So this is what's going to happen. And no, I'm going to be 5 days a week, full-time employee. But again, the company offers great benefits of vacation times and stuff like that. And so I'm still going to be traveling all the time.
I think going into this experience itself is a journey, because now you're going to see a big company from the inside, how this operates. It's going to be an adventure. I'm super excited for you. But before we step off the nomading conversation or topic, I wanted to ask you one thing. If you have to think back about all your experiences, what was the coolest place you nomaded in?
Oh, the coolest place and the coolest trip I've ever had was in Australia. It was going to the Whitsunday Islands in Australia. That was the best trip I've ever had. It was a really nice, a different trip from everything I've done because it was on a beach, on an island. It was like typical vacation mode, and it was very hot and summer-like, and the sun was always there, and I also was working from there, so it was like a typical digital nomad experience, you know, working from an island.
Ooh, yeah.
And that was the best one.
I feel like I want to end the show because you've just destroyed, you've destroyed the dream, because I'm sitting in Warsaw at the moment looking out the window at a very gloomy space. I want to be on that island right now. Thank you, Nicole.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So I would like to go back into the design practice. And my question will be, what is your definition of user experience?
I like to define it as a combination of many user-centric design principles, like color, psychology principles, information architecture, all of these kinds of principles that work together to create a digital product.
Nice.
I think that's nice, spot on. Very aligned with what some of our other guests have said. And then, so talking about UX, right? I mean, I'm very careful to dip into just UX. I think your experiences and your skills are much wider and much richer. But if you think back to some of the work you've done, is there any projects that pop up for you that you could share with us that has really challenged you, that really stuck in your mind?
Yeah, actually, the best project that I've worked on is a personal project that I worked on with my boyfriend. My boyfriend is actually a web developer as well, a front-end developer.
Wow.
So we kind of work together on some personal projects sometimes. And this was one of our little projects, and it's called Code2Go, so code2go.io.
Oh.
And what's basically is a platform, you could say, where you could find snippets for common JavaScript use cases. So just like we have other websites like, not MDN, but more like Stack Overflow, where you search for some from use cases or examples, or you just ask questions and you get some answers to. Well, the purpose of Code2Go was kind of to simplify this process of searching for something and not finding an answer or finding duplicate answers for them. So this is our purpose, is to make sure this is a simple process where you could just say how to something, like how to, for example, interpolate in JavaScript. You just get one answer, one use case, a very simple code that you could just copy and paste. And that's why it's called Code2Go.
Oh, that's great. I just made a note of that one. The other thing that you're really doing and what you're passionate about is teaching, right? So how do you approach this whole teaching aspect of your activities? And are you going to keep it going while you start your new career?
Yeah, so teaching taught me a lot of good things, and it has been an amazing experience, not just to speak at conferences, but also to actually teach at a coding bootcamp. And it really has taught me more than I would have ever learned by myself. Talking to other people about design, teaching them how to design, and seeing them how they're experimenting things is really a nice thing to see, and it motivates me to keep on designing and being passionate of what I do. And I do have a course on Skillshare.
Great. Well, I was just going to ask you about it. Yeah.
So I have a course on Skillshare about my UX design process in Figma, which is probably something you're going to ask about.
Yeah.
And I teach just in 30 minutes how I design my prototypes and websites and apps and Figma. But I'm also working on another course, which is a bit bigger than that, where I teach how to become a UI UX designer. So it's basically a big course that teaches everything, not just the process, but also design principles, how to think like a designer, how the next steps for you to become a designer, and many other things to make a non-designer a designer. So that's my purpose of this course.
So I have this view on user experience design. So UX for me is an umbrella of a lot of things, right? And usually when I work with people, there are people who are lean more to the strategic side of things, and then are people who are more into the front end code and going over to UI side. Nicole, where do you find yourself? Like, are you an all-rounder, or are you very passionate more at getting your hands dirty on the actual design stuff?
Yeah, I think I'm more into designing and prototyping. and working on the UI side of UIX design. That's what I do at the moment, along with some light front-end development like HTML and CSS. So this is what I usually do. I work on the full prototype process, which is starting from wireframing things on paper and then to designing a style guide and making sure everything is consistent, and then to have a final designed prototype of the app.
That's great. So you really like getting your hands dirty and to see and shape how this product or this digital solution is going to actually take form in the real world.
Yeah, exactly. I like to experiment and design like the interface of an app and see it, how it prototypes and how it's interactive, and even testing it with people as well.
How much code do you think a general UX designer should be able to do? There's huge conversations around this where people talk about this, and I hate using this word in quotes, the unicorns out there can do everything. You know, are you super passionate about code? Like, if someone had to ask you, like, do I have to know code? What would be your answer?
Well, actually, just 3 years ago, I didn't know any line of code. I was a pure UIX designer with no coding knowledge at all. And I didn't really know that I should learn any type of code. I was a bit stubborn, you know, and saying that, no, I don't have to learn anything. I'm just a designer. I don't have to code. But then my boyfriend just motivated me to learn a bit of web development. And I said, okay, fine, I will learn a bit. And he helped me learn that. I just did it on Codecademy, which is, I think, the best way to learn coding. Not just Codecademy, but anything similar, like any online tutorials and courses can help you learn a bit of front-end development. And I focused on learning just HTML and CSS at the moment. And it really changed all my process. It really changed everything I do, because now I can be able to know exactly how my design will be implemented. I will know exactly what's going to happen after I'm done with this design. Before, I was clueless. Like, I do this design, I'm done, and then I start wondering what's my design going to look like one day. You know, I was clueless of what's going to happen next. But now I just know exactly what's going to happen and how it's going to be implemented. And I design accordingly, because now I know exactly how it's going to be implemented.
I'm sitting here smiling. I'm loving what you're saying. I think sometimes there's a misconception, because I think there are people who think that when they take up coding, they have to be these uber super coders. You know, they have to know all the Java libraries and be a CSS legend. But I think what I'm hearing from you, and this is my personal opinion, is that just by engaging with a little bit of code to understand how some of these things work, I mean, it just gives you a better insight of how things work. It enables you to have conversations with people with other skill sets, I believe. I'm really inspired at the moment. Also, I mean, as a little side comment, I have a little one-year-old son, and I said to my wife, one of the things that I would love for him to do is to learn to code. He can do anything with his life. He can be a rock star, but I want him to code a little bit.
Yeah.
So, Jay, over to you, sir.
Actually, this is an excellent segue. You have strong feelings about your choice of design tools, and you express those on the internet. There is a little comment about Photoshop that was kind of funny a few months ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that, by the way. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
So I would really enjoy you to explain to our listeners, what do you believe should be the workflow, the tools that a designer should use right now?
So I started as a typical designer. I started designing in Photoshop, because that's what you usually do. And that was like 6 years ago or something. And because I think that was the only tool we had in order for us to design websites and apps. Everyone starts in Photoshop or Illustrator, but then more tools were created for us to use just for UIUX design. So before, we had Photoshop because it just works on everything. Design, photo editing, even magazine design, print design, everything. But then 2 years later, new tools were created. Things like Sketch, like Adobe XD, InVision, Figma. All of these tools are here now for us to design apps and websites. Photoshop and Illustrator are not made for this. They're made for other things. Photoshop is made for photo editing, and Illustrator is made for illustrations. But some people are still using them, and I think this is just makes your workflow much more complicated. So why not just use tools for UI UX design made exactly for that, like the ones I talked about, like Sketch, XD, all of that. So at the moment, I think the best ones available are these four: Sketch, Adobe XD, InVision Studio, and Figma, and a few others as well. But I think these four work exactly the way you want, because they do both design and prototyping. And this is what you want. You want to both create wireframes, make them interactive, then create a design library, and then prototype, and then also collaborate with people. So you want a tool that does all of that. I mean, you could use multiple tools and combine them together, right? I don't like doing this, because I'd like doing all of my process in one tool. And this is exactly why I like Figma. So if you know a bit about my blog and courses, then you know that I'm a bit biased about Figma, and I talk a lot about it.
May you tell us a little more about Figma, because most listeners might not know the specific of that tool.
So the reason why I like Figma from the first place is that, first, I love the fact that it's web-based, website. It's not an app. It's something you go on the browser, you type figma.com, and then you're just inside the tool now. So that's the first thing I like. And some other designers hate this fact, and they don't like the fact that this is a website. They're not comfortable working on it, but I do. The other reason is that it has prototyping inside it, so you could just design and make it interactive. And also you could collaborate with other people by sharing your prototype and commenting right there on the Figma file. So this is also another reason where you could...
So it makes it very, very collaborative.
Exactly. The basic purpose of Figma is that it's a collaborative design tool. So I love this fact that you could collaborate with both your team, your client, and your developers as well. You could do all of that in just one tool. And you can also design with other designers at the same time. And it instantly changes because it's web-based. Everything is on the cloud, so you can just work with designers at the same time. Now, InVision Studio and Sketch are similar to Figma. Sketch now, just last week or 2 weeks ago, released prototyping and also released the cloud, the Sketch Cloud. I'm not sure what it's called.
Yeah, it's Sketch Cloud.
It's basically now the same thing as Figma. So all of these tools are now amazing. They're all awesome. So I don't prefer Figma over the others anymore, because they all do the same thing at the moment. So I'm really glad that they do all of that. I'm comfortable with Figma because it's web-based. That's my personal opinion, because I can just send a link to designers, developers, and just they can open it in their browser. And that's the main reason why I like it. But other tools also work the same way, and they're all really amazing. And I'm overwhelmed because we have all of these tools available for us now.
It's really interesting how these tools are maturing over time. I remember back in the day, we used to do a lot of work in things like Visio and OmniGraffle. And now these things are leaning towards the prototyping side of things, which is really, really awesome. And also the collaborative design is really helping a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I would like to come back to your skill set, mainly your technical skill set. You mentioned before, now you teach other designers how to work with developers. Can you share with us some information about that point?
Yeah, so the real motivation of why I started learning coding, or just HTML, CSS, was that my boyfriend motivated me to learn it. And when I did, I really realized that it's actually incredibly important to know a bit of coding. Not necessarily coding, like not necessarily programming, like backend development or all of that, but at least just to know how it works and how JavaScript works, for example, and to also know exactly how HTML, CSS works, and even if you can code your own projects as well. And so that was my motivation to learn it. So because I learned HTML, CSS, I was able now to work with developers and collaborate with them much more easily, because now I know exactly their language. You know, I can speak their language now. So this is a missing link that most designers tend to lack. They don't really know that they should speak the developer's language, and the developers should also speak the designer's language. Both teams should at least know a bit of each other's knowledge. You know, they should be able to know how the other team works and what do they work on all day. You know, and I think this is really important to have in order for the two teams to collaborate together.
Yeah.
And especially if they're working remotely. Working remotely with developers is something I've did in the last 2 years. And if I don't know any coding knowledge, I wouldn't be able to communicate anything with developers because, you know, we're speaking a different language. I'm saying, for example, stroke, and the developer is saying border. You know, they're actually the same thing, but it's just a very simple example. But, you know, it really translates exactly how we're talking together.
I mean, I'm feeling super preachy. I mean, you're just making my brain go crazy at the moment, because what you're talking about is really, I mean, you mentioned the language of the developer. I think we also, and you'll probably see it now in your new opportunities, and you probably have this as a freelancer, you have to speak the language of the customer. Then you have to speak the language of the user. And I think UX people, especially nicely positioned to be able to have the skill set to adopt these different languages. So it's just, I can't agree with you more that we need to understand the languages of all the other entities that we connect with as designers.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why empathy is a really important skill set to have for designers.
Boom.
They need to be able to put themselves into other people's shoes, like users, developers, stakeholders, project managers, other designers, you know, and they're basically working with everyone at the same time. So they need to be able to know exactly how other people think.
Yeah, we need to take empathy out of the workshop room, off of the empathy canvas, and actually apply it at every second of the design process with all the people we work with, the customers that pay our salaries.
Yeah.
So amen to that.
Yeah.
The next few questions is going to be around skills, because part of our show is to try and help new designers. And as a designer yourself, I mean, for the time being, I mean, you just dropped very exclusive news in our podcast, which I appreciate. But as a designer, as a freelancer, I mean, you have to go out there and market yourself. So two questions here is, how do you find your clients? And how do you use conferences, events, or other marketing tools to connect with people?
So how do I find my clients? The real answer for this is just online presence. I think this is the most crucial point of finding clients and getting a steady freelance work. So you can do this by many different ways. So first, you need to have a website for you that explains exactly what you do and what's the process you work in and how we can contact you. The next thing is to have a portfolio that exactly explains what you've done so far and if it meets the, you know, the potential client's needs. Also having a blog and writing about design. The biggest way that I've had clients so far is through my blog. Because I write so many articles online about design, people know that I'm actually a good designer and that I follow this nice process and streamlined workflow. So they want to work with me because of that. People might think, like, what does blog have to do with any of this? This is actually really explains that you are passionate about design and that you are serious about it. And that's why people will contact you for it. And other things is also to have a good social media connection with people. So make sure to always share that you're a designer, share that you've attended a conference, that you went to a meetup, that you worked on a new project. When you do all of this, people will also see that, oh, wow, this person is actually a good designer. He or she is experienced, and I want to contact them for my next project, for example. So they will put you in their mind.
I mean, that's how I met you.
You're active, you're passionate. Yeah, thanks, Jono. Then there's one thing that just popped into my mind now while we're talking about this, and I've had people talk about, and I can't agree with you more around creating presence, showing your passion. But something we forget is that running a blog, running something like this is hard work. From your perspective, like, how much content do you push out? How do you find inspiration to write articles and stay so active?
I don't really write a lot. My articles are maybe once in 3-4 months, or maybe even less than that. I think it's but more like quality than quantity for me. I write a few articles, but these articles get shared a lot and people contact me for them. That you inspired me from this article and you motivated me to learn design. So I get a lot of these emails, and these are exactly the reasons why I keep on blogging more and more, because people are always asking me, like, how do I do this? How do I get... And this is, for example, the purpose why I wrote the article on how to get steady freelance work. Because a lot of people ask me, how do I get freelance work? I'm a full-time employee and I want to convert into a freelancer. How do I do that? So that's why I do this from the first place. That's why I blog from the first place. I think the first article I wrote was because someone asked me, how do I do this? And I just went down and wrote an article about it.
So basically your blog also is about optimization. You're like, instead of replying to people individually, you decided, okay, folks, I'm going to write that blog post and I will reply to your question directly, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because while I'm answering this person, I was like, oh, wow, this is actually a good blog article content. So I'm just going to go and write about it. And that's what I do.
It's great.
And I also want to add that this is also the reason why I create online courses. And this is exactly why I did the recent online course that I'm working on at the moment. It's because of these questions I always get asked. And I feel like writing articles is not enough. I also want to just explain my ideas through video. And this is why I created this online course that I'm releasing very, very soon. I'm actually also sending out a pre-enrollment discount. So I can also share this link with you. But I would need to write that
Thank
down
you.
Instead of just saying it out loud because it's a long link.
Yeah, please share it with us and we'll share it, of course. The thing is, what I wanted to say, Nicola, what I'm picking up from what you're saying is that without knowing this, I think you are a brilliant digital marketer or marketer yourself, because what a lot of my colleagues do is that they find that a blog is going to do things for them. And then they find themselves either very disappointed that it's not working fast enough. But what I find what you're doing is there's an anchor. There's a challenge or a topic that you want to address. You express it in the blog. You go into detail through e-learning. You maybe talk about it at a conference and you express it in a workshop and you do it in your day-to-day work in your portfolio. So all these things are ultimately interconnected, which is really brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that on purpose or is this just happening naturally?
No, it's actually on purpose. Yeah, I mean, this is also like a part of my online presence. I do all of this for me to have an online presence, but not just for that, because I really want to share my knowledge and I want to share with people what I do and I want to tell them how to do it as well. So I think it's, you know, I am aware that all of this created my online presence, but the real purpose of it is also to let people know how to become a designer like me.
Excellent. I mean, there's an element of integrity in it and authenticity, but then also you're a business. Mm-hmm. You are going to make a living from this, right? So I think you're going to do really well at booking.com.
Yeah.
I'm making a prediction.
Thank you.
So while maintaining your digital presence, may you share some of the difficult lessons that you learned?
The first few months or even maybe a year or two were a bit difficult, because when you don't have an online presence and you are trying to create an online presence for you, it won't be quick. It won't be the next day. It will take a lot of time. So that's something to keep in mind. Like when you start creating your website, your blog, your social media, don't expect to just get a call the next day. It's going to take time, because this is online, this is the internet, and people won't see it in the same day. So this is something I struggled with, and I thought that, oh, well, like, I tried and no one will see my website, you know. Mm. But with time, it will. And when you just keep on working on it, keep on writing blog articles and working on social media and all of that, you will get results and you will see that actually your work was not for waste.
Thank you for sharing that point. Linked to that question, what advice would you have for a designer working now with a full-time job and wants to get his own studio? So he has to build his online presence. That's one of the points. Do you have other advices that you will share?
Yeah, I think another really good point and good advice to have for new designers or designers who want to create their own studio is to have communication skills. And I think this is a big challenge for us designers, because I think designers mostly have an introvert kind of, you know, character. Not yeah. all of them, but maybe yeah. let's say most of them. And I think this is a crucial part to work on. I think we need to have communication skills, because just like we talked about, we're communicating with all the team. We're talking to all the team members, project managers, developers, clients, you know, and we are a business. As you said, we're a business, and we have to get clients and talk about money and communicate our ideas with people. So communication skills itself is something that you have to have as a designer. And it, again, it can't be done in one day. It needs time, and you just have to start working on it from now. Yeah.
I agree with you. And I think sometimes designers undersell themselves, because they can have conversations with some of the toughest people I know, and that's developers. But then when it comes to having a conversation with a client, sometimes designers shy away. And it's just building up that confidence, getting into it from the start, or starting somewhere or learning from a more senior designer. I think that gives you that confidence to move forward. So I agree
exactly.
with you.
I mentioned a lot of these topics in my course as well. I also always say that if you have a great design and you've built like an amazing design, amazing user experience, an awesome prototype, but if you can't communicate this with clients, then what did you really do? It's like everything was gone to waste, you know? So that's why communicating your ideas and translating your ideas to both clients, stakeholders, and developers is a very, very important thing.
Two words.
It's super important. You have to give client the rationale behind your design, the reason you've done stuff. Great point. Now, Nicole, I don't know how you feel about storytelling. I'm very, very passionate about it. I think it's one of the key tools that we have human beings as human beings have. And also it's very important in what we do as a job. So we have in this podcast, we have this challenge, and unfortunately, due to bandwidth restrictions, you can't see me, but I have a deck of cards in my hand, right?
Okay.
And it's a bunch of questions that invoke stories. Now, what you can do is you can lie, you can be honest, or you can just come up with something on the spot. But I've got this deck. I'm shuffling it right now. And when you say to me, stop, and you can do it at any second now.
Okay. Stop.
Okay, great. So you just stop me. Now, I have a card in front of me. So the card is challenging you to say, tell a story about something that you have lost or have found.
Okay. So it could be anything, right?
Anything.
So, you know, because I travel so much, of course, anything could happen to me. Like all kinds of scenarios might happen to me while traveling. So one of them was actually losing my luggage. And while I was traveling from Sydney to Hawaii, my bag was lost, and it's just gone forever. And I didn't really get it after it was lost. So that was like a bad experience. And I was literally a nomad, because I didn't have any clothes on. I didn't really have nothing on me. And I just wore my boyfriend's clothes for a while until I bought some new clothes after that. Yeah, so that was a good experience.
So what is your boyfriend's name?
Jad. It's J-A-D.
So Jad?
Yeah.
Brilliant shout out. Dude, you've not only helped Nicole, but you also inspired her to learn code and do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yep.
Teamwork is important, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for the story. Jay,
welcome.
Over to you, my man.
Yeah. So talking about that, we know that now that you are involved professionally with your partner, and both of you are working on projects together. Him as a developer, you as a UX person. Now you have an insight that most people don't have. Can you share with us the benefits and challenge for you as a couple to work together?
So it has been a great experience working with my boyfriend on personal projects, and not just personal projects, basically anything. Like everything I do, he's involved in a bit in it, you know, because I always ask him, what do you think about this? And he always asks me, you know. So we work together all the time on everything we do. And I think this really got us very, very close to each other. And you really get to know each other even much, much better than you ever will, because you're working on solving problems together and on real technical things, you know. And I think this is truly a gift you cannot replace, because you kind of like take your relationship to a much, much higher level. And because of that, it's been really incredible to he really helped me with everything I've done. And I think I did help him with everything he's done as well. So we wouldn't really be what we are now if we weren't for each other. So, and I think we also learn new things, and because we experiment so much together, it's really truly a unique gift to have. And now for the challenges, I think the only few challenges would be that working together 24/7 might have its, you know, its downsides. You might need to just take a breath and take a break from each other a bit. But you know, that's barely the case. It barely happens to us, only if I'm, you know, like getting my hormones on or something. So it barely happens to us. But when it does, it's important to take breaks from each other a bit and just go somewhere, like take coffee or just, you know, be on your own for a bit. I think it's really, it's a very important thing to do in a relationship anyway, whether you're working together or not.
I agree.
Thank you
that.
For sharing. Yeah.
And then another question. I mean, you go out and you inspire and mentor a lot of people, right? Through the work you're doing in your courses and through your blogging. Is there someone that you look up to? Is there people that has played a role in your life professionally and maybe personally that has shaped you?
My biggest influence and inspiration always comes from articles, but it's never from one person. It's always from different kind of people. And I just stumble upon some articles that say, oh my God, you know, like this article just touched me and I really, really inspired from it. So it's not really one person. It's more like, you know, the internet.
A collective.
Exactly. No, I agree. I mean, as long as you recognize that, because it's this great book, quite short, it's really designer friendly. It's called Steal Like an Artist. Yeah. And it touches on that exact point. And it's when you get these little inspirations from everywhere, it's what you do with it, right? It's not just only copying it, but like you are doing, Nicole, is you're taking these inspirations and you're creating something totally new and you're giving back to the community as well. So you might not have a specific mentor, but that mentorship that you're getting is really having an effect on everybody else. So hat tip to that.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the next question. And hopefully I'm not catching you out here. Is there any books that you're reading? Are you a bookworm, or any topics or titles that you could share with us if you're reading any books?
Yeah, I am reading a few books, but not all of them are related to design.
Doesn't have to be. Yeah.
Okay. I do recommend, however, to read the Design of Everyday Things.
It's an incredibly
important book for designers. It really helps them, you know, it helped me look at things from a different perspective that I've never thought about. You know, even if I, you know, I know design, I know UX design, but it's still just different. It's a really nice way to look at new things. And I'm currently actually reading The Holland Handbook. It's like a book that introduces you to the Netherlands and how people think there and
getting prepared.
All kinds of things. Yeah, exactly, to get prepared to my move to the Netherlands. But I also am reading, you know, every day I read a different thing. I just finished actually reading The Mountain Between Us. It's a nice romantic book. I tend to like romantic books sometimes if I'm in the mood for it. And it's a nice book. I recommend it. It's actually a movie now, I think, but I haven't seen it.
Yes.
Excellent. I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, reading this Holland book, are you going to try and pick up some of the language?
Yeah, I've been learning it through Duolingo, the app. I've been learning it for like a year or something. And I'm picking up the language. Sometimes my boyfriend and I, we just try to speak Dutch sometimes, but it usually just ends with English. But yeah.
As you probably know, South Africans or Afrikaners like me, we speak a form of Dutch.
Yeah.
So maybe you can say, can you say something in Dutch?
Yeah. Hoi, hoe gaat het?
Het gaat baie goed. I actually understood that. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Excellent. Yeah. You're going to do brilliantly in the Netherlands, by
awesome.
The way. You've got the accent down.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, Nicole, I want to thank you for sharing that time with us and sharing your insights. Before we wrap up, may you share with us the different ways to find you on the internet?
I have the same exact username on all social media on the internet, which is Nicole Saidy with my family name, Saidy. And you can just find me on Twitter, Medium, Skillshare, Instagram, anything you want, you can find me there. And also my website is just nicolesaidy.com. And yeah, that's it.